Okay, Renee, can you hear us?
Yep.
Beautiful. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and call the January 10th, 2023 Town Commissioners meeting to order. Present at the table is Commissioner Fields and myself, President Bachler. Joining us on Zoom is Commissioner Capano and Elmer. So first call of business be the Pledge of Allegiance. CJ, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, the first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes from December 13th of 2022.
A motion to approve the minutes.
Second it.
We have a motion to approve by Commissioner Capano and a second by Commissioner Fields. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. The minutes are approved. Next on the agenda is the accounts payable.
I don't have the total in front of me.
I have the total being $20,580.60.
Yep, $20,580.60.
Well, I'll make a motion that we accept the accounts payable in the amount of $20,580.60.
I'll second it.
So we have a motion to approve the accounts payable by Commissioner Fields and a second by Commissioner Capano. All in favor say aye.
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 Accounts payable is approved. Thank you very much. Next on the agenda is the Miller Environmental Water Report. Jeff, you probably don't have a copy of that, do you?
I don't. I do.
He does. Let's go ahead, Ryan. Go ahead and run down the dirty details.
Now you can read.
Total monthly water withdrawal for December of 2022 was 3 million gallons. Last year was 2.6 million gallons. Average daily water withdrawal in December was 97,000 gallons. Last year it was 84,000 gallons. For the month, Miller performed routine operation and maintenance daily tasks recorded in the water tower related to chemical usage, equipment runtime, pH calibration, as well as other routine checks. Daily pH and chlorine tests were performed. Chemical feed pumps were adjusted as necessary to maintain optimal pH and chlorine levels. Monthly operations report was sent to MDE. And 16 missed utilities were completed, as well as the well number one pump was exercised.
Thank you, Brian. While we're on the, any questions regarding the water report? Brian, if you could just give us a, while we're on water, you could just give us a quick update on the, if any, I know it's been the holidays, about the well, the generators, as well as the, I can't think of anything doing the work.
There's a couple, we're trying to get three cost estimates. AECOM is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
They remember they did a report back in 2014 that looked at our two sewage pump stations and our three wells and what would be involved in hooking them up with backup generators.
Right.
And so they updated those numbers and costs for us. We have that information. The one question I had for them was their estimates are assuming that we go with diesel powered generators. And Bobby and I have been talking, we just talked about it today, like, do we want to use propane tanks to power them? So, you know, how much does that affect the cost? And did they already look into that? We have an electrician who's already given us a breakdown of their labor and materials to replace all five, install all five generators for us. Mm-hmm. And then we have another electrician who's willing to do the labor for us if we get all the materials, generators, all the wires, all the parts. So the good thing is we have all that information from AECOM. We'll see where that, we're waiting on that labor cost estimate.
Do you think we might be able to put it before us with the estimates by for the next meeting?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. And how about on well one?
So well one. AC Schultes just has to schedule a time to replace that pump.
Okay. Because we already voted on that for that to, that work to be done. So we that's not scheduled yet.
Not okay. yet, but sounds like it's going to be close.
Okay.
Sounds like it could be this month.
Very good. Does anybody have any questions? Okay.
On the generators, the one that is at Avalon, have you got a hold of the county?
I remember there was notes. We got to talk to M. Davis about the alarm system.
Yes.
And the county, I guess something about the electrical system. Also need an upgrade. I mean, we're in close communication with the county, but we haven't gotten any further because we don't have a cost estimate proposal that we wanted to move forward with just yet.
I mean, once
certainly coordinate with them.
Once we have that, we'll have to coordinate with the county on the installation of that. Okay, but we have been in touch with them, so they know we're looking at it. Oh, yeah. So okay,
there is the fact that it has to be elevated because there is flooding over there.
Yeah, I mean, all, especially the two pump stations are vulnerable to flooding, Veterans Park as well as Avalon Park. And we're going to get permits for the work as well. So that'll, you know, we'll make sure we follow all the pertinent regulations.
Okay, great. Anything else, Renee or Curtis?
Just to make sure that we're working with the SCADA system with the county and to elevate so that they know if that pump goes out.
Oh, and that's the other thing I don't see on the agenda here later, but the monitoring of the, that's the third component.
Yeah, and we've ordered those parts. We expect to receive them 5 weeks from now.
Okay, and so everybody knows that's so that we can monitor the water levels of our aquifer to see if there's any impact upon it. So, okay.
In all three of our wells, yep.
Yep, great. Okay. Next item on the agenda is the Cecil County Sheriff's report. Is Sergeant Kalinske here?
He is not. He was not feeling well. He told me he couldn't make it.
Okay. Has everybody had an opportunity to review the report?
Yes.
Okay. Looks like we had in December 33 calls for service. In town, which is not quite our highest, so it's in the moderate range for our typical median line is looks like it's about 25-26. Traffic stops, warrants, it's good, no overdoses. So for the year, which is great, we only had two overdoses in Charlestown all year. Does anybody have any questions or want to make any comments on the police report?
No, okay. I don't have anything.
Go ahead, Renee.
No, I'm good.
Okay, very good. All right, next on the agenda is the maintenance report by Mr. Bobby. What do you got for us, Bobby?
We replaced the refrigerator at 630 Water Street. It was old and it didn't work anymore. So we added an ice maker to it for them because they asked for that too. So they got a nice one. We picked it up, put it in there. And doors were really small in that house. I will tell you, it was a chore getting it in there. Just letting you know, all the doors had to come off the new one. It was a mess. We got it done. finished putting all the ice heaters in on Sea Dock, and we thermostated them all just like we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so they all have brand new thermostats on them, and we're going to monitor them, check them. And if they look like there's something going on, we're going to unplug them like he has last time. What else? We actually had to salt in the intersections on 1223 and 1224 because we had, it was called a ice blast freeze event, which I've never heard of in my life, but we were prepared for it and we did go out and do that. But I guess it's because when the temperature drops real fast, you can't get in front of it. So we did that. We took the marquee sign all kind of apart and cleaned it, got all the cobwebs, trying to make it look better for when people come in town. And we we re-straightened and realigned the curb boxes that are in front of Beachcomber and on Edgewater Drive that cover our valve boxes, which are main shutoffs for our water. If we ever have a water leak, we have to be able to get these valve keys on it. And clearly there was no way to get them on there. So, we had Elkton come out with their back truck. And with Elkton's guys and our guys, we sucked out all the major valve boxes, which was like, I think 12 or 14 of them. So that if there was something that would happen at night, if we could at least get a valve key on, get the water shut off in the areas without having to kill the entire water tower. So we got that accomplished. And there was like three of them boxes that we had to actually dig up, straighten out, and make sure the keys would go down on it, which we did. We replaced some more deck boards down at the pier. And the reason we're doing that, I got some fire hose from the fire department that they gave us. They gave it to us so we can put on the edge of that to get that brush and stuff off in the fall. So we're trying to get some, most of the boards replaced so when we can put that on there. So we got a lot of them done. And a couple boards on Sea Dock that were coming up while we were buying them, we did them too. We serviced all the lawn maintenance equipment, the weed eaters, the lawnmowers. I mean, anything that had gasoline in it, the ethanol was in it, we drained it, we added stable to all of them. We all know what ethanol does. Avalon Building. We store all our Christmas stuff in there. So what was happening, this room was getting all crazy. So what we did was we took everything out of the room. We built all new shelves. We built them cheap, not with a lot of money. They were $60 a piece, I think. Painted them real nice, and then we stored everything back up on the shelves. And it looks nice. I have pictures. Brian has pictures.
Yeah, it's a world of difference then.
Yeah, you can move around in there. It was terrible for us. But we got that looking good.
You know, when you store the amount of stuff that we have, you got to be able to find it.
Yeah. You can't just have it all in a big pile and you can't find them. But we got it's all organized. It looks really nice in there. And everybody, they should be able to get to what they need to get to. We took down Christmas lights like we talked about last meeting, the seahorses and stuff, because half of them weren't working. So we got all them off the poles. There was a steering wheel that came off the boat in Fairgreen Park. And so we had to get bolts and refigure that out, but we got that back on there. Kind of comical that there was somebody running around with it, but a kid had a steering wheel on his hand. Just saying. And then we cut a bunch of limbs that were on our maintenance building on our fence. We went around there, we cut all the limbs off it. We just laying all our fences. We have our fence in there. So we went around and got them all off. And then basically all the other stuff was bulk pickup and your yard waste and whatever else emergencies would have came at that time. That's all I got.
Cool. Any questions?
There was one during that Christmas time. I know it is policy for town hall to turn their heat down on the weekends, but when we have below freezing, we got to pump the heat up. Bobby and I did go into town hall and I had caught the bathroom in town hall from, it had just started to freeze. But we need to be mindful that when it goes down below zero, we need to kind of pump the heat up and keep the heater on in the bathroom.
Or trickle the water a little bit.
And trickle the water.
So, yeah. Yeah, it got cold for a couple of days there. So, but that's good. It's a good thought. So, right?
Yeah, no, always leave that water trickle, because trickle water rarely beer freezes. It's always a great practice to do that.
Right. When it gets down, when the teens are teens are below. So, okay. Well, all right. Well, moving on then to business. We have the Walkable Community Workshop Report. Is Mr. Thompson here?
Hello. Good evening, everyone. I'm Jake Thompson. I'm a transportation planner for the Wilmington Area Planning Council. I'm going to share my screen here. Are you able to enable participant screen sharing? Should be an option on next to the share screen button. There we go. All right. Can everyone see that okay?
Yes.
All right. So we held a Walkable Community Workshop in Charlestown a couple of months ago. I'm going to go over the report that came out of that workshop. I'll also share a brief update on our regional transportation plan. Our 2023 update is underway. So I see some familiar faces, but in case you weren't there or just as a refresher, so Walkable Community Workshops is a program that we host. It's an opportunity for citizens to become planners. They're experts in their own community. Tell us how you can make the community more walkable, where it can improve. So these workshops consist of three parts. They begin with a presentation going over topics such as sidewalk design, crosswalks, traffic calming, and other tools to improve walkability. And that helps to get ideas going for the walking audit, where their participants survey the area and try to identify issues and opportunities to improve walking. Then we return to the meeting location for a mapping exercise, where the group shares their ideas for improving walkability, and those ideas are documented in the report. The Charlestown Walkable Community Workshop was held on Wednesday, October 12th at the Charlestown Fire Company. We had about 14 people in attendance in addition to staff. For the walking audit, we first took a look at the intersection of Market and Bladen Streets right outside the town hall. And we took a loop around Market Street, Cecil Street, Baltimore Street, along the waterfront and across the pedestrian bridge at Footlog Park. This map summarizes the mappable ideas the group came up with, which include, among many other ideas, intersection improvements, sidewalk additions and widening, pedestrian scale lighting, and trail connections. So during our walk, we noted a couple of intersections, and I'm sure you're all very familiar with, that have a wide sweeping turning radius that is just designed to move traffic quickly. It's not necessarily very safe for pedestrians, especially if they need to cross the street. So the group recommended for both of these intersections, redesigning them to meet at a right angle, similar to the graphic on the bottom of the slide. At Market and Cecil Streets, in addition to the redesign, the group recommended adding stop signs in both directions, removing the guardrail, and adding a direct pedestrian connection to the Charlestown Athletic Complex. At Cecil and Baltimore, in addition to that redesign, the group recommended adding crosswalks with rectangular rapid flashing beacons. So those are flashing yellow lights that flash back and forth and they're activated by someone waiting across the street. So that would be especially helpful for children and parents walking to Charlestown Elementary School. Right outside the town hall at Market and Bladen Streets, that intersection also has a sweep. And this can be confusing for drivers and pedestrians, especially if they need to cross to get to the town hall, the post office, and the park. I know I was confused when I arrived in Charlestown because the intersection is designed to turn right, but I wanted to go straight. So the group recommended redesigning this intersection at a right angle with a mini roundabout. That would include a center island, which would be a great opportunity for beautification or placemaking, such as a welcome to Charlestown sign. Group also noted some sign clutter at one quarter and recommended consolidating those signs onto one pole with wayfinding elements. So those would direct people to destinations around town. Group also recommended widening sidewalks, making sure they're at least 6 feet wide. So they're wide enough for two people to walk side by side, and filling in any sidewalk gaps, particularly on Market, Bladen, Cecil, and Baltimore streets, as well as along Old Philadelphia Road. and also adding pedestrian scale lighting, which is better at lighting up sidewalks compared to overhead street lights. So as you know, most streets in Charlestown's core lack sidewalks. They tend to be very narrow, which leads to low traffic speeds and volumes, and that often makes them comfortable to walk on alongside traffic. However, sidewalks and pedestrian scale lighting were desired on many of those streets. If that's not feasible or it's too cost prohibitive, a good alternative could be advisory shoulders. So that's just a lane restriping where there's one center lane that is for drivers, and the shoulders are intended for walking and biking. And drivers would have to yield to anyone using the shoulder, pull over to allow oncoming traffic to pass. So it's a good way to make sure there's a safe place for people walking and biking when you have not a lot of room to work with and it's low cost. Group also recommended a few trail connections, which would roughly follow the existing street grid on public right of way. So those would include a trail from Charlestown Elementary School to the athletic complex. This is currently passable on grass, but formalizing that trail with asphalt or some other type of material would really encourage people to use the trail. This could connect to another trail along Peddler's Run. We also recommended a trail along the waterfront in Footlog Park. When we were walking through the waterfront during our walking audit, we noticed that the line between private and public land is unclear. We were right behind people's backyards. So a trail would better clarify that you are walking through public lands, and it would direct people towards the pedestrian bridge. And many other comments were shared during the workshop, including ensuring that all curb ramps are ADA compliant, installing bike racks in front of the town hall, the public boat ramp, and Avalon Park, widening the paths in the athletic complex to accommodate golf carts, creating a new boat ramp or a dock in Avalon Park, which would be closer to the public parking lot on Louisa Lane. That doesn't necessarily sound like a walkability improvement, but it could reduce boat traffic on Water Street that currently moves between the existing boat ramp and the parking lot. So it might make walking a little bit more comfortable on Water Street. We also noticed a tree that blocks the visibility of the crosswalk at Cecil in Baltimore. So that might be especially problematic for smaller children walking to school. So the intersection design that I described earlier, that may require removing the tree, or it could be preserved in a new design with improved sight lines. The next step section of the report gets into how to bring these ideas into reality. So as information on federal funding programs can help get these built, such as the Transportation Alternatives Program, Safe Routes to School, and the Recreational Trails Program. The state also has several funding programs for things like sidewalk reconstruction, new sidewalk construction, and bicycle facilities. I'm going to switch gears for a bit before we move on to questions. Just share a few slides on our regional transportation plan update. So zooming out to the region now, we do cover all of Cecil County and Newcastle County. So our 2023 update to this report is currently underway. The Regional Transportation Plan is our principal plan. It includes our strategic policy. So this includes goals, objectives, and actions. And that kind of guides everything we do at Wilmatco. All of our plans and reports should work towards those goals. And also covers major long-term transportation projects. Those are divided into two categories: constrained projects for which funding is identified, as well as aspirational projects. This report is updated every 4 years, and our current update is due in March. Last year, we reviewed our regional progress report and public opinion survey. These are a couple of other reports that we do that help inform the regional transportation plan. We developed the draft goals, objectives, and actions. We did outreach to agencies, civics, and municipalities. We're continuing to do this, including right now. We developed the project lists and did an air quality conformity analysis. And we're just about to begin our public comment period. The draft report will be available starting next week. We will refine the document based on any feedback we receive and expect to have the report adopted in March. Give a sample of some of the projects that are expected to be funded in the Charlestown area. So the East Coast Greenway, which will be a walking and biking trail running from Maine to Florida, currently runs through Charlestown. It is on road through Cecil County, is expected to be funded as an off-road trail through Cecil County sometime between 2028 to 2035. MARC has a Penn Line commuter rail that runs from Washington, D.C. through Baltimore, Perryville, And there is an expansion proposed of that line that would extend it from Perryville to Newark, Delaware. That's expected to be funded in 2029. And there are also several road improvement projects in the surrounding area. So the next steps for the regional transportation plan, we're going to continue to have agency coordination and public outreach. Our public comment period begins next week, January 18th. So the draft report will be available for comment. We also have coming up our town conference. That'll be on Wednesday, February 8th at the Embassy Suites in Newark. So essentially functions as a public workshop for the RTP. There'll also be some guest speakers. So that'll be a great opportunity to see the report in depth, see maps of the projects, things like that, and talk to everyone involved. So once the walkable community workshop report is finalized, it will be up on our website, wilmapco.org/walkable, along with all the past reports. And the draft regional transportation plan update will be up next week, January 18th, at wilmapco.org/RTP. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Yeah, when is the Our Town conference in Newark? What time is that on the 8th?
I believe, I'm not sure actually, I believe it starts in the evening. Details are still being worked out.
Okay, so it's an evening, we can follow up on that.
Yeah.
But it's not during the day or in the morning?
No.
Okay, very good. I thought the walkability survey that we did and workshop that we did was pretty productive. It was good to get people out there and actually talk about, you know, how can we make Charlestown more friendly for pedestrians? Because there's a lot of need out there. So I know we've had conversations with SHA and so forth. I mean, I assume once we get this report finalized and whatnot, this will be part of that packet that we send SHA.
Yeah.
Correct, with SHA as we do our facade.
And some of the federal funding programs that are available, it'd be a good idea for us to actually partner with CC Cannon. We could join forces and improve any kind of grant applications on federal sources. State funding sources that are available, we could probably use some of the ideas from this report and put together grant proposals for. There's a webinar coming up, I believe, for state funding, Jake. Isn't it? If it's the end of this month, early February, the TAP transportation alternatives
program. I'm not sure. Yeah, I'll look into it.
Well, I remember hearing about it anyway. So that's what I think we'd look into, some of the good ideas that came out of this workshop.
Brian.
Yep.
Can you get with the fire department? Because I know that in comprehensive plan, there's been talk about putting the roundabout is there in the center of town. But yeah. I know in the past the fire department was saying that it was going to be very difficult for them to have it right there because of the trucks.
Yeah. Yeah. So with a lot of roundabouts, modern roundabouts tend to have a mountable apron. So they're designed that normal cars, they're just going to drive around them, but bigger trucks like fire trucks, things like that, they'll just be able to drive right over them. So that's definitely something that can be worked out in the design phase.
Yeah, and the fire company was at the workshop, Renee, and that did come up. We discussed that. And if, you know, the roundabout right there at Bladen and Market, but you know, kind of floats up to the top as a higher priority, we'd certainly make sure we prepare a proposal with them.
Okay. I just want to make sure, because I know that was talked about in the past. And now that they're getting bigger trucks, I just want to make sure that it's not hindering them.
Right. Yep.
Mm-hmm. No, it would be, if roundabout was in place, it would be designed with a hard apron so that, you know, it would easily be, you know, ingress and egress wouldn't be a problem, I wouldn't think. Any other questions for Jake?
Jake, I just have one real quick on the regional transportation plan. The East Coast Greenway, you said there was a section of it off-road in Cecil County being proposed?
No, not yet. Well, it will be proposed. Cecil County does not have any off-road sections just yet. The on-road portion is assigned throughout the county, but it is part of our long-range plan to eventually build a fully off-road trail through Cecil County.
That's exciting. I was just curious if we have a location figured out yet. Doesn't sound like it then.
No, just, I don't believe that's worked out yet.
Okay.
You also mentioned the MARC train expansion from Perryville to Newark. Are there intended to be any stops other than Perryville in Cecil County?
I know that Elkton is very interested in a train station. Otherwise, I'm not familiar with any other plans.
Are other locations being contemplated for train stops at all to make it truly a commuter oriented type train?
Not that I'm aware of. The idea is really just so in addition to commuters along the line, so if you would be able to travel really anywhere from Boston to Washington, D.C. and beyond using commuter rail, because right now you'd have to take Amtrak and that's a lot more expensive. So just really connect the system. There's the only gap on the Northeast corridor is, I believe, between Perryville and Newark. It doesn't have local commuter service.
Back in the day, Perryville had a train station, Charlestown had a train station, Northeast had a train station, Elkton had a train station. So it'd be nice to at least get at least one more train station in town for the people of Cecil County.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Anything else? You got it. Renee, anything else from you?
No.
So Jake, just the next step on our part, just real quick, I know the meeting coming up on the 8th. Anything else that we should be doing in the interim?
Take a look at the website, lamaca.org/RTP. Next week, January 18th, we will have the draft report available to download. I will say that we are making some last minute changes to the project maps because DelDOT did have some last minute edits, but nothing major. So the one that will be there on January 18th might not be final. If not, I'll let you know.
Okay. We appreciate the work that you all put in, and it's kind of helpful as we're like obviously planning for the future and whatnot and making our infrastructure improvements here. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is the speed camera contract. Is Mr. Phelan?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
How are you? Good evening.
How are you, everybody, today?
Good. You've got the floor.
Okay. Well, so Brian and I have been in communication the last, week or so, if not longer. And I know been several months now, maybe 2 or 3 months, we met and you guys expressed interest in possible speed camera program. We did the traffic study out in front of the elementary school. I supplied that data. We also did another one. Was it Cool Springs, Brian, if I remember correctly? Even though that's outside of the half mile radius, just to get an idea of what the traffic is like, outside and some of your other problem areas. But after speaking with Brian, it looks like we have sent him a draft contract. If it's something that the town's looking forward, looking to move forward with, once that contract is agreed upon and signed, then, we can start the process on our end of, working out the state highway permit for the location in front of the elementary school. And of course, we cover all that with no cost. Same with our systems. I've supplied a quick PowerPoint, just a quick overview of what kind of cameras we offer. Really, it comes down to what we think is going to best fit and what the state highway is going to allow us to put out there. So I'm not really going to say it's going to be a certain one, just so you guys have an idea of what we put out there to use. Once that's taken care of, again, we will continue to work with the town to make sure every process is done from start to finish. And then, as soon as we do a 30-day warning period, we'll help with any type of public service announcements to notify the public of what's happening, across the town and with the program. And then we'll start issuing violations, once those systems go live and, they start collecting events. So I guess I'll kind of leave it there if there's any questions and maybe see what the town believes and, what your next steps you think are going to happen, going forward. And of course, if there's any questions, I can answer them while we're on the phone today.
One of the questions that I have is, I know that the road is going through Charlestown, but that's a state road. So if there's violations, does the money go to the state or does it go to the town?
Nope. Every fine that's collected under these programs stay within the jurisdiction. Nothing goes to the state. The only time the state gets any money from these is if you have a very well-off financially run program and the money is not spent. There's a percent of the funds that are collected that have to go to the state comptroller's office, kind of like a tax, if you don't spend them. But as long as that money is being allocated for public safety, the state doesn't touch anything that comes from these programs.
Okay.
Are we allowed to put it in Cool Springs?
I think Cool Springs is outside that half mile radius from the school.
But correct. We
could definitely get it on Route 7 between the two entryways in and out of town.
And there's other town roads that have problems within the half mile radius of the school. Last meeting, I know there was a question that came up, you know, can these cameras take pictures of people running stop signs? Because yeah. That's one of our issues too. It's not just speeding. State law doesn't let us take pictures of people running stop signs yet. Is that correct?
Yeah, the state law doesn't allow for automated enforcement for stop sign violations, only speeding in school zones and red light violations. Now, there are two counties within Maryland that are authorized to do residential enforcement, and that's, 24/7 enforcement within residential areas, and that's Montgomery and Prince George's County. Our goal, and we have quite a few clients outside of those two counties, is to help push the state legislators this year or the next year, with of course support from our jurisdictions and us alike, to really understand why those two counties are only ones that their citizens jurisdictions are allowed to keep their citizens safe in residential areas minus anywhere else. So we're going to help, push that effort forward. But right now, for you guys, it would have to be a half mile radius from the school. And then anything that falls outside of that, unfortunately, we wouldn't be able to do any type of photo enforcement there.
Mike, I guess as part of the commissioners considering this program, I can make us a map so we see where that half mile radius is.
I got to say, I'm totally confused on this thing. Why did we put it over in Cool Springs if we weren't allowed to use it over there?
Well, we just
tested it over there if you can't use it over there.
We just wanted to see what kind of speeding was happening.
Well, we knew there was speeding because you get hundreds of complaints from over there, right?
We don't get hundreds of complaints.
Well, we get a lot of complaints then. Where do you get the most speeding complaints in town from?
We get a few.
Where do you get the most from, am I asking you?
There's probably
the majority of them.
Springs. I mean,
Trinity Woods.
It's spread throughout town, but yeah.
It's all through town.
I gotta tell you, I was confused because one meeting we sat here and talked about this, and somebody brought the question, can we move this around? And the answer was yes.
You can move it around.
But we can't. See, that wasn't said though. Well, now, was that said at the meeting? Do I need to go back and check the minutes or am I wrong on this?
But it's being said.
Well, yeah, now the contract is sitting here to sign. But it wasn't here to sign the other day when we were talking about it, though.
This is just language to consider, right? I don't think it's ready to...
Well, sorry, but I feel a little bit confused and let down by this whole situation. I'm not against speed camera in town. I'm against the fact that we weren't told it was a half mile from school only. And, like Renee said, that's a state highway. Don't we have to have permission from them before we do anything? We don't plow that street when it snows.
Need a state firm.
Yes, and so... So, sir, just to alleviate some of your questions. So we work directly with all the state highways across the state of Maryland. There's a permit process that we go through that is then authorizes us to put systems within their right of way. It doesn't authorize the enforcement on that road. All the state highway has to do is allow us to put something in their right of way. So since, Maryland 267 that goes right in front of the school is already assigned school zone, we just need state highways permission to put it in their right of way. Other than that, that's the only thing they worry about. They don't control anything else when it comes to your program. These programs are run locally with a local ordinance passed and with the state law. They don't have any say in the enforcement thresholds. They could be higher than the 12 miles an hour, but every fund and every penny that's collected goes back to the town. Nothing goes to the state highway at all.
Unfortunately, we're constrained by the General Assembly and Maryland law. But as Mike was pointing out, there is some legislation out there. So this could be very much like the golf cart situation where we go to our legislators and say, hey, we have these communities that are outside this radius and we would really like to, from a public safety perspective, we'd really like the legislature to continue to allow us to put these types of cameras in those areas. So that's something that I think it's probably worthwhile for us to consider.
I'm not saying I was against it. I'm just saying that I was kind of misled that we could put this in Cool Springs, or we could put this in the Manor. We could put this in any one of the streets in town that are having problems with speeding, including Mr. CJ here. You know, I'm sure he'd love to have a speed camera by his house, you know, catching people spitting a few tickets out, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a lot of people in this town probably would like to have that speed camera.
That's something
I'm just saying that when this was first brought to the attention of the board, it was never mentioned that it had to be within a half mile of the school. Of course. Oh, it was. Okay, well, I'll have to see that in minutes then, because I never saw it.
There were limitations on it.
That then.
I do agree with what Jeff was saying, because at the last meeting, I did bring up when it was going to go over to Cool Springs, how was that going to be in that radius? And I was told, well, it's by the crow fly. And I said, I don't know how that's going to work, but if there's ways to get around that by doing through the General Assembly, then that's what we need to do.
And the data that we collected on Cool Springs is just more statistical data to help drive it to the Assembly. Now we don't have to wait for a traffic study. We have empirical data in front of us to say, here's the speeding problem going on within the town of Charlestown, and here's why they want to have that law amended to allow them to do it outside of school zone areas. So I understand your concern. Trust me, you guys aren't the only ones that they, you know, I've had plenty of clients across Maryland who wish they could put cameras in other places. And unfortunately, it just doesn't fall within their purview right now. But the data has been already collected, and we will be more than happy to help push that, you know, along with our state lobbyists and talking to the General Assembly and doing our presentations on behalf of you guys or alongside you to make sure we get this done.
Michael, do we have to do this in other areas of our town too, like that's closer to where Town Hall is?
You mean traffic studies or put the cameras there?
To put the cameras there for a traffic study, or is that in that half mile radius?
So it is, if I remember correctly, I believe it is within the half mile radius. And it is as the crow flies. So you can put at every furthest point of that school's property line and do a half mile radius from there. But once we have a program start, we do all of our traffic studies at no cost to our jurisdictions that we supply. So if there's a location in the future that you guys want to see, maybe we want to get some data from, we'll be more than happy to come out and put our devices up and try to collect that data for you. And along with moving cameras, if you know we put two cameras out or we put a system out to get the program running, and then it turns out, hey, there's a section of road that falls within that half mile radius that you guys have a concern with, then we can move that camera over there. As long, you know, if it's on a state road, then we just do a permit for it. But again, those permits are time consuming, but they're not impossible to get past. And you know, we have a really good working relationship with State Highway Administration across the state. So I don't have any concern that it wouldn't happen. It's just going to be getting those initial steps of getting the program started. Then we can really start looking at what other locations can we put it in that you guys see fit.
So Mike, this agreement, and we have just gotten a copy of it, we're looking at it for the first time tonight. I see this is a 3-year term agreement.
Correct. And I will say this. I mean, this is, you know, obviously, you know, your town attorney or whoever your, you know, your legal representatives, you know, have them look at it or whoever you need to. It's all negotiable, you know, terms. If it's something where you guys want to try, you know, 1 year and then have it auto renew every year, so you're not locked in. You know, we have changed our terms over time to benefit those that what we need to get done, especially with, you know, you're really not sure how it's going to benefit the town. You know, that's something that we can do. You know, we have a terminate for convenience clause in there, so there's no cost to you guys if something were to come up. Obviously, if you know, you decided it's just not going to be feasible anymore, we're not going to come after you on that. I know I'm just giving you my word at this point, but you know, we can go through and look at that contract in finer terms. I just wanted to have something for you guys to look at tonight.
I mean, that's one of the things I was going to say, that termination for convenience, you can terminate with 60 days prior notice, but then it says the town has to pay a $1,500 per month for the balance of each month remaining on the initial term. So anyway, it's negotiable, correct?
Yes, we can go through it and make some changes to it as we see fit.
Okay. And then additionally, and just the price, the cost structure and so forth, I see that you have an attachment. And so is it, so it's basically you're going to charge $10 per violation that actually gets paid, correct? So if a ticket goes out for 25, 40 bucks, whatever it is, and the person pays the ticket, you get $10. That's your cut, right?
So it's not per paid. It's actually that $12 lookup that you're seeing on there is so every tag that we do a lookup on, we charge $12. Now, out of those lookups, only a certain, let's say 97% will be mailed, and then those will be paid, and you guys keep 100% of the fines that are collected. So we bill on the lookup, not on whether they're paid or not. You can't charge a client in Maryland under a per paid status for speed cameras. It's either got to be this lookup model, or it's got to be a flat rental fee per month. We keep it this way because it still kind of keeps it more violator funded, where as those cameras perform and they ebb and flow, the charge or the cost of that program can benefit you guys in the long run by not being a set fee over a number of months.
Okay, so backing up then. So you're telling me that the charge, so every time a ticket goes, somebody gets, a picture gets taken for a car speeding, it's $12 to the town.
As long as we look up that tag, if we perform a lookup as if I was a police officer stopping the vehicle and I look up their information, if we never look up that tag for whatever reason, then there's no charge. It's only based on the ones that we look up. So for example, if we did 100 lookups in a month and we mailed 95 of them, because maybe there's some that just don't get a return back or there's something that gets rejected for, now you're still charged for those five. But when those 95 get paid, you guys keep all the funds, and the $1,200 that was billed beforehand comes to us. The rest of the money stays with the town. So rather than charging you $4,000 a month per camera, that only is going to cost you $1,200 a month per camera. So the value of that, of the violator funded side of things, stays the same. Like I said, it's not a fixed rate for every month that camera is performing.
So there's that $12,000 for the lookup, but then you also have in there a collections administration fee under provision two of the attachment, which says that there's an additional processing and administrative fee of $10 per violation for each payment.
Well, correct. I didn't mean to cut you off. That's for collections. So let's say the tag, it goes unpaid for over 90 days and you guys have a collections firm that goes after them on a civil collections fee. We tack on that $10 that the violator pays if it goes to that point. Now, you don't have to have a collections side of things. We still collect all the fines, and we don't charge you for anything that is paid on time or that's paid only if they get sent to a collections firm. And then those are then went after by that collections agency.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have to meditate upon this and review it and wrap our head around that structure, the fee structure and so forth. But I had those couple of questions. And you mentioned also there are four different cameras. What? I assume we would just choose one of those particular cameras, or?
Well, yeah, it would be more based on what is State Highway going to require us to do as far as installation, right? Do we have to put a pole in? Can we get power? Those factors come into play on what kind of camera we put out there. Now, we do offer a LiDAR, which is a light based system. Then we have a radar, which is your standard radar system. So we have two different versions of enforcement that we can put out there. But as far as the actual physical equipment, it really comes down to what we can get State Highway to approve for us, and then we'll put that into the permit process. But still, it's the same cost. It doesn't change anything from the town standpoint. The enforcement numbers are the same. It just depends on what variation of that equipment we're going to put out there.
Okay. Well, I guess my last question would be, provided that we work out all the details and sign the agreement, how long from the time that we signed the agreement that it takes to get the state approvals and to get these cameras up?
So, yeah, our longest factor in all of this is going to be the State Highway. We normally see a turnaround of, let's say, 45 days or so from the time we submit a permit. Certain districts are faster. So, working with, the district up there, they might be able to turn this around a lot quicker than that. Once that's done, you do have a 30-day warning period, but that has to start as soon as that permit's approved. We can't do the warning period, but, obviously before we have the approval for the cameras. So, I would say 90 days, would be a really good point to turn around and say, this is when we can get a camera out there enforcing. Everything else that we do, we can get done administratively in a parallel time that while we're waiting for state highway, as far as getting the courts, getting all the documentation we need, the citation drafted up, all those different items that I lay out, we'll do those in parallel with the state permit that once it's submitted.
Okay. And there's, and again, I haven't reviewed the contract, but there's no additional fees for that work, that legwork that you guys put in.
Correct. We don't charge for any of that legwork. We don't charge for the installation of the cameras. There's no service, monthly service fee, installation costs. We cover all the costs for installing the system, the permit costs, all the contractor work. We cover all of that. The only thing that is, you know, I guess the cost of the town will be the $12 lookup once those cameras go live.
Right. Which has to be paid whether or not the violator pays or not.
Correct. But we see about a 75% payment rates in Maryland with the registration holds that you're allowed to do. So I know it seems, you know, off of obviously your first time looking at it, it does have a little bit of a concern to it. But I can show you some more, you know, offline, some more data to show how it works. And of course, we can always talk about other options if, you know, there's another option you guys want to have instead of this. I always have the ability to go to my CEO and tell him, hey, look, we got to work it out this way. And we can try a different version of it if it's something that we need to look at.
Okay. That's great. Does anybody else have any more questions? Renee?
No, I'm good.
Good. All right. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mike. I appreciate that. And that's really helpful. And the commissioners will take a look at the contract. We'll get it in front of our attorney, and then we'll see if we can't put it on the next agenda. And we'll probably be in touch with you with some negotiations.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm here. Brian knows how to get a hold of me. So if you guys have any questions while you're reviewing it, don't hesitate to reach out. You know, you don't have to wait till a certain time. And then, you know, we'll try to work this through with you guys and make sure it happens.
Okay. I'd love to see him up by summertime. It'd be great.
Yep.
I think. So, okay. All right. Thanks.
All right. Appreciate it, everybody. Have a good night.
You too. Okay. Next item on the agenda are the charter amendments. So, the latest and greatest, huh? So, these are some limited suggested charter amendments regarding the duties of the president, also the dismissal procedures, and also regarding the elections, particularly voter registration and candidate registration. So has everybody had an opportunity to kind of take a look at these?
I have. Which one do you want to start with?
Well, we'll start with the first one that we have in front of us, which is the regarding the president. I don't know if you can pull that up or not for everybody to take a look at. I don't know if they'll be able to see it from where they are or not. What it's talking about primarily is that, and I'll just read it just briefly, what it currently says is president shall assure that personnel actions are carried out in accord with town policy as contained in its personnel manual. Okay. The president is ultimately responsible for all hiring and firing actions, which are, and this is the addition, which would be added in it originally said, or which are done with the consensus of the commissioners. And we're talking about striking out that language and adding, which are approved by the president in addition to a majority amongst the remaining commissioners, meaning that any hiring, firing certainly would be done by the president, but would be done with a majority, essentially a majority vote of the remaining commissioners.
I'm in agreement with that. I mean, that's pretty much what we've been doing. We just need to have it in writing what we're doing.
And my quick, and I've talked to Brian about this periodically. I look at the language as being a slightly redundant, to be honest with you. I mean, what it currently says is the president is ultimately responsible for all hiring and firing actions, which are done with the consensus of the commissioners. Consensus of the commissioners, you know, what does that mean? And Renee, to your point that the additional language in there kind of spells out what consensus means, and it means a majority amongst the remaining commissioners.
I also think it needs to also be in there that it is either somehow in there about the executive session, or the hiring is brought in front of an open forum. I know even in the county, they do an open forum where hiring, blah, 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 and vote on it that way. So should that be added in there?
I I've had the conversation with Brian. I mean, the charter is really just setting on guardrails and parameters, and it should be. I mean, I think you want to avoid making it overly specific and leaving it kind of broad and general, because you can tie yourself up if you make it overly specific. And I don't think you need to put in that additional language. What I don't like here is approved by the president in addition to a majority amongst the remaining commission. I don't like that word amongst, to be honest with you. I mean, what we want to say is that it's a majority vote of the remaining commissioners, correct?
Correct.
So I would suggest changing the word.
And amongst. I understand what you're saying, but I don't think it's appropriate to do things over email or individual phone calls is what I'm trying to say.
And so that would be something hiring and firing, right, is an employee issue. So that would be done via executive session. I mean, we wouldn't be able to have a public vote on any of that.
No, but if for hiring, like we started to do, the way it should be done is that it's brought to the board at a public meeting saying this is what's going on. And it's recommended to hire this person based on the hiring committee. But for reprimand or termination, that needs to be, I don't know if it somehow needs to be in there that it's in an executive session, that it is not over an individual phone call or email or text.
Well, again, I'll just say that obviously, like, a vote on firing of somebody would certainly have to be via executive session. And I don't think you need to, I mean, it's, you know, in accord with the Open Meeting Act. And I don't think you need to put that in the charter.
I make a motion that we approve this and get it changed up to where it does take, you know, the president and four commissioners.
Or, no, you know, majority.
Yeah, the majority. That's what I meant. The majority. You know, because nobody, to be honest to you, nobody's jobs are safe at this point. That's how I look at it. Nobody's safe. And this would, you know, it would help out and make people feel like they are guaranteed a job tomorrow. Not because one person didn't like them. So I think it's fair to have, you know, the majority have to be firing, agree on it, because this, I don't feel like it's fair the way it is. So I'd motion that we change this up to the, you know, for anybody to get fired, you would have to have a majority.
I would second that.
Well, I would move, I mean, I can't make a motion, but I would recommend changing that word amongst to vote, the vote of the remaining commissioners.
But still have majority in there.
Yeah, just leave majority in there, but get rid of the word amongst.
That's fine.
Okay, we can do that.
Majority vote of the remaining commissioners.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the hiring was going to be with the hiring committee and then with an open meeting.
No, you would just leave it just the rest is as it is. That's would be the only modification for that provision. We have a motion. By Commissioner Elmer, a second by Commissioner Capano, all in favor of making those modifications as stated. Say aye.
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 Jeff?
Abstain.
Okay. So next provision is the dismissal procedure. It says upon a recommendation to dismiss an employee, including approval of the president. And
that's just the personnel manual.
That's in the personnel. That's the thing. Yeah. I was going to say, I haven't read this before.
I don't have this one anyway. I don't have whatever you're talking about. I don't have it in front of me anyway. So
that's
from what this is.
It's on the screen over there too.
You want to remove that word amongst again there too.
Same thing.
Just didn't think it. This first time I'm looking at this provision right here.
This is the same thing as what we were talking about. It's the same sentence.
But it doesn't make sense. The way it reads right now, upon a recommendation to dismiss an employee, including approval of the president, that's not proper language. It's not saying what it's intending to say. Let's just pass on that. Let's pass on this. I know we want to get it. We want the same language in both, but it needs to be modified. And I want to hold everybody up here thinking about it. Let's move to the qualification of commissioners. And this is the basically regarding the election provisions and about voters. So there is a provision in here. We're looking to, it says every person who, so this is a qualification to vote in Charlestown elections. Every person who is a citizen of the United States is at least 18 years of age, has resided within the town for at least, now it was 33 months?
90 days.
It was 90 days. And we're looking to change it to 30 days immediately preceding any town election and is registered in accordance with the provisions of this charter, shall be a registered voter of the town. Every registered voter of the town shall be entitled to vote at any or all town elections. So we're looking to change this to 30 days. And if I might, just what is the impetus for desiring to change to 30 days?
It was to be consistent with state law.
Okay. All right.
I make a motion that we change it to 30 days.
We have a motion on the floor.
I'll second that.
And a second. All in favor of changing the amount of time in which someone is required to have resided in the town of Charlestown from 90 days to 30 days preceding any town election, say aye.
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 Curtis? Did Curtis say aye? Yeah. Aye. Okay, motion carries. Very good. Next item on the modification to the charter is, and keep in mind, all this, once approved, it doesn't have to go in for public comment, I believe. It's got to go in for a period of public comment. So this isn't final.
It doesn't have to go before the attorney too, right?
I think it has been in front of the attorney. Right. Yeah. So this is regarding the Board of Supervisors of Elections. So right now we have three Board of Supervisors that participate on the elections. And what we're looking to modify is to make it consist of three members on the board plus one alternate so that we have a backup. So and that's what the new language says, which I think you can see up there. It says there should be a Board of Supervisors of Elections consisting of three members and one alternate who shall be appointed by the president with the approval of the town commissioners. Any discussion, or I'll take a motion.
I'll make motion that we change it to three board members and one alternate.
I'll second that.
So we have a motion by Commissioner Fields, a second by Commissioner Capano. All in favor of the modification, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Very good. Motion carries. Okay. Next proposed modification is regarding registration. It says citizens qualified to vote shall be able to register at a town or county office. Every town or county business day. Does that make sense?
Well, the one thing that also needs to change there, because after looking up the state regulations now that says that you can register to vote on the day of the election. So we really need to put in here to follow state registration rules, not put in a calendar date.
And again, this is about registering to vote.
Correct.
They won't be a resident for the 30 days.
They won't be, so they wouldn't be able to, correct. They wouldn't qualify to, they can still register, but they wouldn't qualify to vote.
Yeah, as long as they're they can vote if they are 30 days residents, but right. If they did not register to vote, they can actually walk in that day and say, I've been here for 30 days and I want to register.
They got to prove the residency though. Correct.
And that's following the state regulations, which they're, I mean, if we want to put it in here, it shows on the state things of what needs to be shown on that day.
And that's what this means.
I mean, town or county business day. I would recommend under 25606A, there should be a comma after a town or county office, comma. Citizens qualified to vote should be able to register at a town or county office every town or county business day. I know that's trying to say every business day that the town or county is open. It's just awkward.
I would change that to register on business days at town or county offices.
Okay. No. I don't want to interrupt him.
Except within 30 days prior to the election.
Right. When you register on election day, if you go to the polls to register on election day, you are given what is known as a provisional ballot, which you can go ahead and fill out the ballot, but it's a provisional and they have to go and check the registration information. And I don't want to say that it doesn't get counted, but a provisional ballot has no place in a town election because it does not, you are not really given, the town has no way to check their driver's license or any of their information.
You're saying actually on election day.
That's exactly right. They walk in here to the town hall and they think they register, but in essence, their ballot doesn't count.
Right.
Now, how would we, as the election board, disassemble that ballot because it doesn't really count at that time. Right. You have to check all that. You have to check all the information out.
That's why we have that 30-day requirement.
That's exactly right.
30-day requirement right. in place, yeah.
To give you time.
And they have to be a registered voter for 30 days. That's the
correct.
That's the change from the 90 days.
The 90 days, right.
I thought that was an improvement.
Yeah.
Citizens qualified but should be able to register at a town or county office on each town or county business.
There's no provision for, there is a provision for absentee ballots,
mm-hmm.
but there's no provision for provisional ballots.
Right.
Well, we're trying to kind of finalize this wording here. Yes. On any town or county business day? On any?
To register.
That's just.
To register.
That really doesn't make any sense.
during business hours at town or county offices.
I hate saying this. I think we should take some more time instead of doing this in front of everybody here today about fleshing out that language a little bit more. So let's agree. I mean, I think we're all in agreement. We want to clear that up because we want to make sure that, and Diane, and if you don't mind me asking, there's no problems with you on your end about, and because we all do it, register at the county office building. And that's what we're trying to clear up here.
Right.
Because we do that and we want our charter to be consistent. Just for general
hits and giggles, I brought in the registration form. Okay. That and it goes to, and I brought them in so you can come into the office here and register to vote. They can get it on Zoom. Okay. Here it is.
Mm-hmm.
When they fill it out, it still goes to 200 Chesapeake Road in Elkton.
Right. Okay.
So here's my my recommendation is citizens qualified to vote should be able to register at a town or county office on business days, except within 30 days prior to the election.
Yep. I like it.
Okay.
That would be consistent with the above language.
So.
All right. So say that again. On business days.
On business days.
Next.
Comma, except within 30 calendar days prior to the election. Okay. Is everybody good on that one?
Yep.
Okay, next, and we'll vote on that here in a second. Registration, it says, shall be permitted and no person shall be entitled to vote in town elections unless he or she is registered in the town at least 30 days prior to any given election.
Basically saying what's set up there.
Right.
Except the add he or she, though.
Yeah, this, we don't have a separate registration anymore, Diane, do we, for just town elections? I know at one time we did, but we don't have that anymore, do we?
Yes, you do. And no, you don't. It's still that 30-day kick.
But if someone comes in here to register, they're going to be filling out that form.
That would be my thing.
Right. We don't have our separate registration form, do we?
Yes.
Oh, we do.
Yes. It's a separate form that I typed up.
30. Yeah.
Currently, you have two people. Now,
I see what you're saying. For people that don't want to be registered in state and federal.
And it used to be. They didn't want to be registered to vote because they didn't want to go on jury duty.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
That law changed and is now your driver's license.
Yep.
Okay.
So I don't know of that many people that want to give up their driver's license to keep from serving on a jury. There's two people in town.
Yeah.
Two. That's it. One that lives on Black Avenue. One lives on Caroline Street.
Okay.
And that's up to them. But that's a separate list that the town would have to keep track of.
And people should be able to do that. We don't.
They certainly can if they want to.
Right. Okay.
I was asking because I think B is based on that, right? That it's just for people that want to vote in just the town elections, right?
And the other form, it actually goes to the state, and the state or the county, as by way of the state, gives us the list of all the registered voters. And they keep up with their address changes. If they die, if they move out of the town, all that comes from the county office by way of the state.
Okay. Okay. So is everybody good with that revised language?
Yep.
If so, take a motion on it.
Oh, hang on. This note's in here. Under this section, 25606, letter D.
Brian's talking about the new provision that you kind of asked to be put in there, Renee, about voter registration requirements based on the annotated code of Maryland.
Yep.
I'd say we just leave that out.
I think we need to keep what the state is, because that way we don't have to keep going back in and changing it.
If it conflicts with town.
We're already saying that we're approving right now a provision that conflicts right now, which is you're saying that you can register the day of the election, but here in town, you can still register, but you can't vote.
So which one are we on?
We're talking about 25606 registration, but you're talking about the D provision.
Okay.
We're not necessarily quite in step with that with the state requirement of registering on the day of the election, correct?
Correct.
And I think that we have a basis not to. I mean, if we want to, you know, keep in mind, we're going to put this out for public comment and we can run it by David again, the attorney, about conflicting language between state voter registration and the town registration. But I think ours can be somewhat different than what the state does.
Okay.
So I...
that in any of the A, B, or C, correct?
And I want the state to have to be able to decide what we can do and what we can't do. I don't want to just have to change it just because the state does something crazy down in Annapolis. It's my thought. But if we want to bring it up to the board, if a change comes in, then we can have this discussion. You know, the sitting board can make that decision at that time. So I don't really want to put D in there.
Okay. I was just looking up what the codes were for the state. So I understand what you're saying. We could take that out.
But as far as 25606 A and B, I think we're good with, and we should make a vote on, right? If somebody wants to make a motion.
I motion to make the amendments for 25606 A and B.
Awesome. So we have a motion by Commissioner Capano, second by Commissioner Fields. All in favor, say aye.
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 Very good. Okay, the last provision, and I appreciate everybody's patience, is 25608 regarding candidates. And there's a proposal that says any person desiring to become a candidate, this is about being a candidate for commissioner, under this charter, shall at least 30 days before the election file with the town, and the proposal language is a Maryland driver's license and a statement of such candidacy in substantially the following form. And then, of course, we're also, and then we have boilerplate language, and we're changing it to 20 whatever, and it says 19 whatever. So we're changing that. So, but the substantive portion of this is the additional requirement of a Maryland driver's license. And I've already voiced my opinion to this to Brian that, you know, I don't believe that I'm not in favor of doing that. putting Maryland driver's license, because I don't think if somebody wants to be a kick commissioner, who cares if they have a license or not? I mean, that shouldn't be a requirement to be a commissioner. And I know that we're doing this because we're trying to make it easy for the residency requirement, but there are other means and ways in which to prove residency without having a driver's license.
So why can't we put in here about the Maryland codes, because it shows in there about how you can do that.
What?
When we can do that.
The residency requirements?
Yeah.
Change it from driver's license and ID, Maryland.
Well, ID. I wouldn't have any of it. I mean, so for example, if you go into MBA to get a driver's license, right? MBA online has a whole list of ways in which the state has said you can prove residency. And I think a copy of that's in the packet. Did you put that in the packet, Brian?
Yeah.
So a copy of that is in the packet, and there's, you know, whether it's proof of electric bills or car insurance or a title or a registration, there's a multitude of different ways. I just think some people may not even have a Maryland ID, you know, but there are other ways. They should still be able to run for as a candidate in my book.
That's what's up on the screen now.
There are all the different things that you can use, Diane, to prove residency.
But if on the residency,
that doesn't mean you live there.
Something that shows that they've been here for a year. The date would have to be backdated to be here a year, not just a current bill.
Well, you're right. They would have to show whatever. What's the time? Forgive me. What's the time period? 3 months. What do we say?
Yeah.
3 months.
No, for to be a resident, you have to be here a year.
Yeah, to be a resident of Charlestown.
One year.
To be a
commissioner.
Right.
You have to be a resident for 1 year.
Correct.
Where does it say you have to be a resident for 1 year? My apologies.
Not on this paper, but it's in the charter.
Whatever that time period. Yes, you would have to show that, you know, that bill or that document would have to go back for a year.
It can be in here, but it needs to say must file with documentation proving that you've been a resident for a year. At least a year. It'll take questions away.
Any person desiring to become a candidate for commissioner under this charter shall at least 30 days before to file with the town. As far as the candidates provision that we're looking at right now, this is just about filing, right?
Yep.
This is about filing. So I would just knock out Maryland driver's license. I mean, we already say that they have to be in an, what's the other provision? I'm sorry, that requires a year registration or the year residency. What provision is that? You don't have that in front of you, do you?
No. I can look it up.
Okay. How about this? And proof of residency. Did you say that?
Yes.
Okay. Just say
proof of residency for 1 year.
With proof of residency, 1 year residency. Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. That's fine with me.
We just have to be, it'll take away questions that have been brought up, and this way it'll make it clear.
That's fine with me. I mean, that's what's that provision show that we have up there?
I don't want it to be
Maryland residency. That's or proof of town residency. That's fine.
Proof of residency. And I mean, if they're showing a utility bill, Is it a summer person that has a house here, or, and that's going to be something else.
And, I don't want to get too, I don't want to get too bogged down in details in the charter. I mean, what the town can do is have an NDA has and give them a copy of that form as to what is satisfactory to prove residency.
And this is something that the person signed. So yes, this is one thing that has to be ironed out.
So as far as tonight's discussion, I would suggest that we change at least 30, it would read at least 30 calendar days before said election, file with the town, proof of town residency, 1 year residency, and a statement of such candidacy. Okay. And then it goes blah, blah, blah. So proof of 1 year town residency.
Okay.
Okay.
Like their electric bill, they could be a summer resident and have an electric bill. They don't live here.
They could have a Maryland driver's license and live in Chesapeake City. I mean, you know.
That's not a, that's, that'll, it, usually with MVA, you just have a card that has your address on it.
And then that's when it's issued.
I'm just saying, just because you have a driver's license that says you live somewhere doesn't mean that you're actually living there.
That's right. And that's,
I know. So we do the best we can with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of, I think that that accomplishes what we want to do, though.
I was just looking at the fact that on the driver's license or a state ID, it says when it's issued. Even on your passport, it has when it's issued.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are dates on the on those other documents that are required too. So, and I, you know, I got my Maryland driver's license recently, and it was a pain in the tail end providing proof of residency. All right. So, are there any further discussions or suggestions? Otherwise, I'd like to take a vote on that.
Jeff, Curtis, do you have any comments?
Mm-hmm. I personally should still, I still think you should have an ID too. I know what you're saying, Carl, and you don't think so, but you know, people that are in this town, don't you want to know who they are and, you know what's going to happen with the town? Because
they got to get voted.
Maryland driver's license, then that probably pretty much says, you know, what's going on? Why don't they? If they live here, why don't they have a Maryland driver's license? You can't go to the Cecil County landfill if you don't have a Maryland driver's license. They'll send you on your way. You know, it's just something that they ask for, and they've been asking for it for many years.
You have an ID
of some sort.
Some sort, regardless if it's a regular ID from the state, a passport, or even a driver's license or a military ID. It has issue date on it.
Well, I think what's currently required by the charter is one, that you're a resident. No, that's first and foremost. And that's what this is. I mean, that's why you're asking for a Maryland driver's license. Could certainly be used to show that you are a resident of Charlestown. But again, not everybody has a Maryland driver's license or a Maryland ID. And quite frankly, those people should not be excluded from being able to run, because it's up to the people, the residents and the voters in Charlestown to sort all that out and to vote for that individual.
Against what you have said before for appointed boards. If somebody moves out and temporarily and their address still shows here, but we know that they're not, people have been taken off of boards for that. So you have to be consistent, and what you're saying is not.
You do one thing and then do something else differently, the same thing. You can't have your cake and eat it.
Proof of residency.
You know what? It's just a simple solution here. We've got two board members, voting board members here. Why don't we ask their opinion? See what they say.
Well, I know.
Diane, what do you think?
I know what Diane.
What I'm going to say, because I'm the one that
she wants a driver's license.
Okay. What do you think, Prosper? How do you feel about it? You're on the voting on the you're voting on the panel there. How do you feel?
I'm slightly confused. I like a driver's license.
You do like the driver's license. I make a motion that we change this to say that you need a driver's license or some kind of a state ID.
I'll second that.
Terrible. Second. Terrible. Thank you, Prof. We have a motion and a second.
There's a motion
and a second
on the floor for the language to be modified to a Maryland driver's license and or
state ID.
Maryland state ID. All in favor of modifying the charter to that, say aye.
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 I'm a nay.
Okay, 3-1.
Okay.
I'm just going by what the voters want them. They handle the election. I just think they have a say in it.
Okay. Moving on. We have a couple appointments or one appointment. So one or two, just one, two. Two appointments for the Historic District Commission. We have two individuals who have been gracious enough to put their name in. One is Marcy Schneider and Heather Hogue. Are either of them present online or here? No? Okay. And there are, in your packet, there's a couple brief write-ups on both of these candidates.
We have two openings and two candidates.
Two openings
and two candidates.
So, if anybody's willing to make a motion for a nomination, we'll call it to a vote.
I make a motion that we nominate Marcy Schneider and Heather Hodge for the two open positions on the Historic Commission.
We have a second.
I'll second it.
So we have a motion by Commissioner Fields, a second by Commissioner Elmer. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Renee, you there? Did we lose Renee? Did she say aye?
I did. I had it on mute. I apologize.
Okay, no problem. Very good. Okay, well, the motion carries. So we have two new board members, and a big thanks to Ms. Schneider, Ms. Hodge, for volunteering and helping out with the town, because that's a very important position. So thank you very much. Next item on the agenda is town peer rate increase. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, in the packet, there's a rationale for this. We were looking at the maintenance items last year and found that the fee we're collecting, which is $754 for the season, it fell about $40 short for each slip. Just for regular maintenance items, replacing deck boards, ice heaters, and thermostats, maintaining the electrical system, paying for the utilities, both water and electric, and trimming the vegetation along the access path. So, recognizing the shortfall and in an attempt to adjust for inflation, as well as to take into account the neighboring marinas' rates, we'd like the commissioners to consider proposing a fee increase of $50. So it would go up from $754 for the season to $804. When you add our existing 5% slip tax on to $754, you get $791. When you add that 5% on to $804, you get $844. And there's a letter in your packet. It's
I'll give you that. It's just a letter of concurrence from the state. Our ordinance that established the fee for the municipal dock tells us that we need to make sure that since we received state funding to build the dock, that we've received concurrence from DNR. And we explained them the same rationale, got a letter of concurrence from the state.
I have a motion. Or discussion?
So one of the things that I asked when I heard this was coming up is, so every year, the money that's been going in, the money we've had shortfalls, is that what I'm hearing?
Correct. Yep. Yeah, so when we
The money we're actually pulling from the regular budget to pay for the rest.
Correct. Yep. Yeah, the expenses for just last year, looking at 2021-2022 fiscal year. That's what we calculated.
How many slips are there? Estimate. How many slips are there?
36. Is it 36? Sorry.
I mean, I think it's interesting. You know, we always talk about, or the other marinas in town. Yeah, that a lot of times they get upset with the town and so forth, and feel like we're, you know, competing with the town, and we shouldn't. I feel like we shouldn't be in competition at all with the private marinas and so forth. And so, I mean, you know, these rates are still pretty affordable, I believe. So I don't have any opposition.
Can I ask Bobby a question?
Sure.
Bob, how do you feel about this? Do you think it's warranted? Do you think the expenditures are there? I mean, for us to raise it $50? You do a lot of the maintenance work down there?
I don't want to really weigh in on that.
No, I understand. But you're a voter, though.
I'd like to see it say same. But right. If the expenditure is there, you got to make your money. Because I don't know how much electric is down there.
Right.
And ice heaters, they went up there $1,500.
Yeah, I know.
The ice heaters used
to be $1,500 before, right?
$1,500. So, it's going up.
We've lost some to theft.
Much do you want? I mean, it's up to y'all. My personal opinion in there, but the expenditure is really, really there. I mean, he's right. Because, you know, stuff like that.
What do you think, Curtis?
For somebody mowing the grass. And, right. You know.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I'm asking is, so we spend $30,000 a year for the maintenance that is down there.
Seems like a lot.
It does seem
like a lot. It does. I understand. Like a building there.
It can be anywhere in between two guys. I mean, the state has approved it, you know, up to the number that's here. So or it can just stay the same. But
the reason I'm asking is, are we spending $30,000 a year on that pier?
Yeah, it does sound high.
I mean, I'm just looking at a perspective. He's saying the ice eaters are $1,500. So even if we replace them every year and some of the other things, do we spend $30,000 a year? And I was asking for a breakout and I never got that.
We're not replacing them every year. I don't think just the ones that are wearing out or getting stolen.
But you should also be thinking about the longevity of the pier as well. And eventually the pier, you know, will have to be replaced as well.
Come up with that $40 budget shortfall. We must have compared it to the expenses for the previous year.
I asked for how much money was in that account and how much money that we're spending, and I haven't gotten that. And that's what my deciding factor would be. And I'm being told there's no money in that account. So I don't understand.
Does that money go into a separate account?
Longevity. But if there's no money in the account, where's that going?
I think the income for that account, just it gets absorbed into the general fund.
But what all he's saying, Renee, is, and perhaps it was inartfully stated, I think he said that the expenses has increased by $40 per slip, which is probably accurate from last year, considering everybody's expenses have gone up. So anyway, the real question is do we want to, you know, there's the basis, because expenses are increasing, right? And do we want to increase the slip fee or not? Do we want to increase the slip fee, or do we want to leave it where it is?
And that's why I was asking, are we really spending a little over $30,000?
Not spending $30,000 on expenses on those slips.
No way.
And I think we're what has come up or what Brian has subsequently said is that the expenses this year compared to last year have gone up essentially $40 per slip or $1,200, $1,500.
And then I don't see a justification here.
Other than everything has gone up in life. So, you know.
Yeah, I just don't, if we're not spending that much money, I don't see the justification.
Did not.
And Mary's pointing out that I guess it was not increased last year. So the question is, do we want to leave it where it is, or do we want to increase it?
Based on what information I have, I'm saying to keep it.
Does anyone want to make a motion? Okay. All right. Well, then no motion will be made. And let's move on to the next item on the agenda. Curtis, you got anything you want to add, buddy?
No, sir.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is the Tasker Lane. No action on that. Tasker Lane Shore Erosion Control Design Concept. Brian?
So, I'll give this to you, Jen. This is quite a packet we received from Underwood Associates. And really the last two pages, Jen.
Right.
I think it's a pertinent.
I think we have Keith, you here with us from Underwood this evening?
Yes, I just joined. I'm here.
Good. Welcome.
Thank you.
The concept design, if you want to go to the last page of that.
So
yeah, right there.
And then Keith, why don't you just explain real briefly what your company specializes in?
Sure. Underwood Associates is an ecological restoration company. We specialize in restoring aquatic ecosystems specifically. So we do a lot of living shoreline work here in the state of Maryland, also stormwater management, stream restorations, that sort of thing. Our principal, Keith Underwood, was the one that invented the regenerative stream channel conveyance, RSC technique that you may know a lot about or may have heard about. I'm happy to explain anything. And we were also in the news recently for our work over in Havre de Grace, not too far from you all. Mm-hmm. So we're a design, build, permit, the whole package company, cradle to grave. We help apply for grant funding. We can do all the engineering calculations, everything.
And you just primarily specialize in shoreline type projects?
Shorelines, stormwater, and streams, aquatic. Yeah.
Okay. Very good.
Water management of sorts.
Yeah, we hooked up with Underwood. They helped us with a grant proposal to do the stream restoration at the athletic complex. Mm-hmm. They gave us a good design for that. Mm-hmm. And we do have tentative approval that we got awarded that grant. So we're excited once that agreement gets there. So I guess the concept there's erosion occurring along, I think it's about 200 linear feet of shoreline there. And our sewer lines running right along the river. So we just asked Underwood, say, hey, what would you do in this situation? So Keith may give us a little bit of background and how they came up with that design. But that, if you scroll down a little bit, Mary, so you can see the bottom of that. Cool. Yeah. The water. I think that's the classic. Keith, isn't that like the classic crab claw design? When you're trying to preserve land, you got the two rock jets.
Yeah, exactly. It's very similar to what you might call a conventional rock jetty configuration. What we've done is kind of make it a little more nature-based by, whereas the conventional system might be, you have one just up the coast, the revetment is a good analog, very steep. It's a 2-to-1 slope, so about, 45 degree angle. Whereas our proposal is to use much smaller stones that interlock with each other. So while those big revetments, you may be used to a 24 to a 48 inch stone, one that you wouldn't want to try and pick up. Most of our structure is built out of a stone no larger than a fist or maybe, you know, two fists, 12 inches or so. But we also include the full range starting from that larger, you know, 12 inch rock all the way down to sand in what you would call a well-graded mix. And essentially it means that there's so many points of contact between the particles that it, they all interlock and they act more as earth. And it also allows us to grow plants on top of the rock. So it really hides it aesthetically. And Habit of Grace is a pretty good example, though, you know, you need to give it some time to grow in. I've got other project pictures we can get your way that show what these projects look like after months or years. And they can really disappear from view.
I mean, that sounds really good that plants can grow in rock. So I'm guessing that naturally there'll just be leaf litter and some soil kind of deposited there by the water that will help some of those plants grow.
Yes, yes. They definitely accumulate a lot of wreck. Anything that washes up from the tide will get captured by the system. And that's a good point that the engineering philosophy behind this design, behind this crab claw design and others like it, is to manipulate wave energy. So incoming waves are refracted by these hard headland points and create a refractive beach embayment between them. And so along with all the floating debris that you may capture, you're capturing sand that is moving along the shoreline, littoral drift. And it looks like you have a fair source of that here because you have this nice sandy beach. And so we would expect this project to grow on itself over time, so be virtually maintenance free. I don't know if you're augmenting this beach that you have now, but you wouldn't need any beach nourishment for this project. It would nourish itself.
Can you point out landmarks on, since that's so sure. small, can you point out landmarks so that we have some sense of
where we are in the world?
Yes.
Yeah. They have
Holloway Beach.
The sewer line manholes are on there.
Well, right there doesn't mean anything.
Well, yeah, you can zoom out that image a little bit, but it's not going to help you.
We've got a plane. It says beach green. It says beach green right there to the left. Up at the top there, the vetment stops.
Yeah. Can you see it that far away?
Yeah.
So that's just, I don't know, what, 20? 40 feet north of where Tasker Lane ends.
So, another staff would all be built in for my office?
Yes.
Okay.
And really, the idea is to help
I have build up. Speech.
I hear you. And that's why we're talking about this. But the idea is just to help minimize the erosion that's occurring along that sewer line. Right now, like that one manhole that's in front of Dennis's house. It's surrounded by water.
Did he point out which beach he was talking about? It seems that it has a lot of sand.
Yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned something?
Keith, you said there was already some good sand on a beach. Is that in the middle of the crab claw that you were referring to?
Yeah. The pictures that you provided, there's some sand, but more so than the middle on either end of the project. It appears that there's sand. I can't say that I've been to this site, and that's something I would certainly remedy if we're going to work on this together. But it, you know, just from aerial imagery, it looks like there's sand at the end of Beach Road.
We have two sewer caps.
There's the one in front of Dennis's house,
and then see the other little top.
And then there's the other one. Okay,
right.
Okay.
I
see
your
phone. Of Beach Road, that is a beach. There is a retaining wall, and they have a beach there.
That's along with
the boat ramp.
Yeah, the Holloway Beach.
Have they taken the riparian rights that we have into consideration?
You would still have them.
And what about the boat ramp that they have?
That has not been taken into consideration.
And
yeah, this is. Yeah. These can all be subject to change.
Really
so
conceptual here.
I mean, we can certainly scooch things in. We have a lot of play with exactly how these things look. So it's not set in stone yet.
No. On a campground. Keep coming down. No, break down. A little more. Yep. In there at the campground.
I have a question. You say on there that at the ends it says coarse woody material. It says locally sourced materials anchored into the head points. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, so we're a company that's focused mostly on creation of habitat. I'm sorry, I'm going to give you some context before I get to the answer of your question. Our company first started as a landscape architecture company and then focused on restoration of habitat for endangered species. And we found that habitats are a very good tool to solving many of the problems that humans have created for themselves. But the coarse woody material is essentially just a tree, a downed tree. If there's none to be locally sourced in this case, I should have removed that because I don't anticipate that we would take down any trees for this project. Nonetheless, we would like to bring a tree in to anchor it at the end of the point and to provide a perch for turtles and birds and provide habitat structures. But it's not an engineering requirement. If it's on several projects, we've plucked those out if the need arises or if it's preferred.
Are you talking a log or like a trunk? Or
yeah.
Something?
Yeah, like we prefer a whole tree.
Including the stump?
Including the stump, yeah. As much as we can get.
I've seen your project down in Havity Grace, and that's quite an extensive project that you have going on down there. Is this, so we're probably going to get some kickback from, for example, from Holloway Beach, I would think, and also some of the other residents in that area in regards to they're worried about their beaches. And I know in reality, you're creating more beach space, really. Do you see it being easy access across the, because I assume the kind of the yellowish orangey places are sandy beach area, correct?
Yes. Yeah, those are the main beachy areas. Yeah, everything would be sand, but some of it to qualify as a living shoreline needs to be planted. So.
Right.
There'd be like submerged aquatic vegetation in the water side of the sand, I would imagine.
If we're lucky, yes.
Is it the expectation that the residents would still have access or the public would still have access to the sandy beaches out front?
Yeah, certainly. That's intended.
Okay.
We did a shoreline job down at Assateague Island State Park. That protected marsh that was inland, aquatic vegetation that was in the water, and maintained open access for the state park visitors.
So in doing that, do you incorporate little pathways or walkways for the public to get out there, or do they just walk across the other areas that are just a darker brown?
It can be both. It's kind of user's choice. We don't like to design them. We like to let the people figure out where they want to walk, and then you can just leave those areas unplanted.
Okay.
They Spartina alterna flora and Spartina patens are the salt marsh grasses that grow on a project like this. And at the end of the day, they're a grass. So if you wanted to, you could mow yourself a little path to walk through.
Gotcha.
I know that can be the concern sometimes too, Keith, with these sorts of projects is, you got a beach now and you got rocks and you can walk out into the river and go swimming for, 20 feet out into the river. After a project like this, it may not be intended, but, you're creating habitat with a project like this. You might end up having grasses move into an area where you didn't have them before. I guess, of course, you could have grasses move into your beach, even if you left it the way it was, right? Just by the river moving sand and rocks around. But I think that's probably, that could be some folks' concerns that, that clean, clear access to the river could have some plants in it.
When he's talking about rocks, is he talking about the round ones that they put the footlock?
Yeah, about this side. This side.
Well, that project hasn't worked well at all.
Well, but that's it's a different
Round Rock's roll. There's no dirt, there's no plants.
So we would be interlocking Round Rock's with smaller pebbles with sands all together in a unit.
I think there's a concern, and I've seen it, especially in the wintertime, how violent the river gets. I think there's a concern that the rocks could move.
Sure. And we would investigate that during our engineering. But I can tell you that our Assateague Island project has a fetch of, 15 miles or so, which you might challenge it here. It's something we'd have to be wary of. I won't say that, but it can be done.
Okay.
The one thing I know that is also going to come up is the boat ramp that is at the campground, and to be able to access their moorings that are out there. Because in the cove, we do have a lot of moorings that are out there. Will this affect any of that?
So we would expect to see accretion near the in the near shore, in that kind of darker brown areas that I indicated on this plan. So we can certainly scoot that lower edge away from their boat ramp if that's a hard launch is it a hard launch based for like trailers, or is it simply a kayak launch?
For trailers.
For trailers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we would probably adjust this a little bit so that it doesn't accrete sand into the area that they're going to be driving in and out of the water. But that's a relatively simple adjustment.
And Dennis, are you saying you have a boat ramp on your property as well?
1930s.
So you've got one smack dab in the middle of that.
Where's your ramp?
There's his house right there.
Right here?
Yeah.
Yeah, right down. Yep. Right.
On that side?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's right in the middle. Right now, Keith, remember that there's a manhole kind of right the concept. I guess, I don't know, 20 feet to the southwest of that. 25 feet to the southwest, there's a boat ramp on private property there. And we're talking
about. Okay.
So.
I'm sorry, I missed that last sentence. We're talking.
That manhole that's right in the middle of the concept plan.
Yes.
Right next to that house. It's the address 317 Tasker. There's an existing boat trailer ramp on private property about 25 feet southwest of that manhole. That's right in the middle of the beach creation.
Sure. Okay.
Well, the crab claw.
So Keith, the reality of the situation is what we, this may be a little more extensive than what we can accomplish. I don't know. I'm just talking right now. But is there a possibility this could be scaled down to the point where we really just protect the infrastructure with the sewer lines or the manholes, as opposed to going great guns on the go ahead.
Yeah, it's definitely a scalable practice. Although, while we scale down the headlands, we have to pull them closer together. And what you'll notice is that your beach may start to become less and less usable. So there is a balance to be struck between a usable shoreline and a shoreline that protects your infrastructure. Only protects your infrastructure. Both this one and a much smaller version could achieve protection of infrastructure, but I'm not convinced the smaller one would provide you as much recreational opportunity.
Okay. Well, maybe I think it'd be great to maybe get you guys down here and maybe walk the site, and then maybe also meet the property owners and discuss, what feasibly what we might be able to accomplish to protect the infrastructure, satisfy the property owners, and and enhance the environment. So,
okay, yeah, we would be game for that.
Brian, you want to is.
Yeah, no, I think it's simple.
Is everybody, does that sound logical to you guys, Renee, and Curtis, and Jeff?
Have the property owners and also have Don from the campground to make sure.
Absolutely.
About the boat ramp and the beach that they have there.
The beach. Okay. We can certainly do that. So,
it's Keith.
Keith, maybe Brian will get in touch with you and you can, because I think it's great what you've come up with, and it gives us a lot to think about. And that's kind of that living shoreline is kind of, I think it would be real attractive for Charlestown. So I think it's a great idea. Right. I know.
We just have to do it right.
That's right.
And what about taking into consideration the original revetment project that was going to be extended?
The riprap? We can I mean, everything's on the table right now. Everything's on the table. So, okay. Anything else for Keith?
I think Keith, we wouldn't expect you to come down here for free and hang out with us for a couple hours. So if there's any kind of contract issues we got to discuss, right. We can do that and maybe finalize something we could bring to the next commissioner's meeting.
Yep. I'll let you guys, get us something. You guys work that out and then we'll okay. Talk about the next meeting. But I think this is progress. So, okay.
Yeah. Sure. Let me know if you have any other questions come up, and we're happy to take the next steps with you.
Okay. That sounds great.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Keith. Appreciate it.
All right. You all have a good night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay. So next on the agenda there's nothing else on the agenda that I see, which is correct. So
public comment.
Well, let's go around with the commissioners first. Jeff, do you have anything you want to bring up?
Not at this time.
Okay. Renee?
I'm going to be getting off here soon. I'm still in a lot of pain from what I'm going through medically here. but Brian and I and the rest of the stakeholders are meeting on Friday morning for the stormwater master plan. So we'll have something to report next month.
That's good. That's great. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay. Curtis?
I don't have nothing.
Okay. Just briefly, we are meeting with Brian, our meeting with Artesian tomorrow. As you know, Artesian's looking to put in a bunch of wells right up adjacent to our town, which could negatively impact our aquifer and so forth. So we're going to have a conversation with them tomorrow and see where we are. So, okay, let's go to public comment.
Okay. Well, Diane, do you want to go over your list that you provided?
No, I just put it away. You got
here. I got one. Just one. These are folks to be removed from the voter registration list.
Right. Most of them are people that I know have moved out of town. Some are deceased. And it's in the charter that the election board will present the names of the people
who would be removed from the voter rolls.
Right.
Yeah. You don't make a motion.
And the two at the bottom are Jane and Peter Williams. I put asterisks next to them because technically they moved out of town, but they're.
We don't need to go through everybody's names. No, I don't think.
But they still own their house. And so. I consider them still residents of the town. My guess is, and it's purely a guess, they will require an absentee ballot.
No, they did last year.
Okay, that's just that, but that's why I marked it the way I did.
Gotcha.
Technically, they moved out of town, but
they're still
residents of the town. Okay. Of course, we know that Joe is deceased. Nancy Bowles. I haven't marked as deceased.
We don't need to go run through everybody's names.
Well, I'm not going to. I'm just some of them are marked as inactive because the county has sent them two pieces of mail that was returned to the county and they were marked inactive. If they show up, they have to prove residence in the county.
That's good. Okay.
So very good. I did my due diligence.
That's a lot of work.
Yes, it was.
Thank you, Diane.
have to keep track of y'all.
Thank you for volunteering in this position.
I didn't volunteer.
It's a big job. And you too, Prosper. All right. Very good. Anything else, Diane?
Nope. That's it.
Dan Rupert?
Yeah, I have a question concerning the cameras.
The speed cameras.
They're going to take up $12 per incident that they record or whatever. What would be the cost of a ticket if you were, say 10 mile an hour over the speed limit?
Well, I forget what
it's a set fee.
The set fee.
It's a set fee.
I think it's.
So if you're doing 15 miles an hour, if you're doing 30 miles an hour over, it's still the same price.
And what would that price be?
$40, I think, is what they're allowed to do.
Yeah, it's.
Okay,
yeah.
And they're taking 12 out of it.
Right.
And we're paying for a police force to come in here and oversee the town, plus the cost of what these gentlemen are going to charge us. What would a police officer or two cost?
Oh, an actual police officer?
Yeah, a real one.
If we had a law enforcement division here,
you'd have to have a lot more than it would cost. $20
A couple $100,000 out of the gate, probably.
It'll be more than that. If liability insurance costs you more than that, probably.
Okay, well, what are we going to have tied up? What are we paying the police force that comes in here now? What are we paying?
Close to $80,000.
We pay them about.
I thought it was 76.
This budget's around 80,000, I think.
Okay.
So it's 80,000 just for them now.
Plus the cameras.
Hopefully.
What are you going to do with the cameras?
Hopefully. This should not be a financial burden upon the town. I mean, hopefully it'll support itself, be self-sustaining, I would think.
Okay.
I was definitely confused by that price drop.
Where do you draw the line? How much more do you have to spend before it would pay to have our own police force?
Well, this is something that we could help maybe work toward that. I mean, obviously the ultimate goal is that maybe we would be able to have a police force. But I still think our budget is kind of constrained.
We still need to
crunch these numbers though, because this is the first time we've seen them, and I really want to see how it does play out. Like I said, every time they look up a tag, they're hitting us with $12, even if we get that money or not, right?
But it seemed random, like when they looked it up.
So we need to pattern. We need to read the agreement.
That's why it's confusing.
We need to read.
What about errors?
Going to send a ticket out for everyone they look up either.
Yeah. We need to read the agreement.
What about Eric?
And then we need to have a discussion with Mr. Phelan again.
Yeah, it needs to be done for like a year with possibly renewing it.
I didn't like that provision in there that if you get into it, 3-year contract, and then you terminate a year in, and they want $1,500 a month for the final 2 years of the contract, right?
Yeah.
So all that's got to be worked out.
If you're going to start spending that kind of money.
And then you got the errors. Because my mother-in-law just got a ticket from Baltimore. She wasn't even there.
Yeah.
And the picture was so blurry, you couldn't even tell what kind of car it was. Other than the tag. So they wanted her to pay it, $40.
He sounded like they'll negotiate it out with it. But I think this is a public safety thing. I mean, first and foremost. I mean, we're not doing it necessarily to make money. We're doing it for to slow people down.
Exactly. If you got somebody doing 60 mile an hour and it's 25 zone, that's crazy.
Yeah. And we can move these things around, which is kind of cool.
I thought also, I was told at the last meeting that it would have covered stop signs because Market Street is terrible with, people run, whereas a police officer would be able to write a ticket for a stop sign if you're running the stop sign.
But that's something we can work with our legislators on getting one for public resident and the residential areas outside that half mile radius of the school. And then also for stop signs as well.
And we can that says we can't ask the sheriff's office.
I was going to say, can't the sheriff's office write tickets for stop signs?
I have. Can the school purchase
another piece of property?
A piece of somebody's yard in Cool Springs.
They possibly could.
I'm just asking, would that give us
a half mile?
That's a school board question.
school building.
We'd have to get a structure on it.
I think so.
Not just a school property. Lot for school bus, like for a bus stop for kids.
This used to be a school.
Yeah, that's true. We did.
Anything else, Dan?
That's all from me. Thank you.
We got this. I got it. Ursula.
Oh, gosh, it's me.
Sharpen my pen.
Is that ready? I don't know where to start. Let's start with this project you're talking about, the new erosion or revitalization. What are you calling the new project? Like revitalization?
Tasker Lane.
Tasker Lane Shoreline Erosion Control Project.
All right.
I like the title.
I don't mean to be cutting, but the one that we currently have at Footlong is terrible. I can't say it any more than that. It is terrible. And if you're talking little nice round rocks, they're lovely. They're nice to pick up. And they do get picked up. They get moved by the river. I don't understand. I know we're into saving the trees and planting the grass and doing all that ecological stuff, which is wonderful. And for birds and the fish and whatever. But the rocks that went in back in, when was that?
It's all the way.
That's been 10, 15 years.
2005.
Right. It's amazing that those rocks have held. Some have maybe dropped down to the sand on the outside, or some have maybe flown in a little bit on the inside. But the ground behind the rocks has not moved. It's still there. And we even have trees growing up in those rocks. If you want to talk about trees, they're there in your. We don't need them in the rocks, but they're there. So I sometimes wonder if we just don't go overboard with all the other stuff that you talk about. And maybe you just need to use the word KISS. Keep it simple. And I will say the last S.
Stupid.
Yeah, I'm going to say okay. But that's just an opinion on my part. And I think when you're looking at dollars and cents that you're spending, and I'd love to know the bottom line on football, what was it?
Yeah, 110.
That's $110,000 that has just gone poof, as far as I'm concerned. Well, your sandbags are there. Yes, your sandbags are there, but a lot of your plants are gone. And soil. As time goes on, it's all going to do the same thing again. And the old deal was to save the sewer main. So I think that was the major concern right there.
So far, the sandbags are holding.
Yes, they're holding. We'll see how they do over time when somebody starts walking over the top of them, or walking with their walking stick or their bike or whatever they do, and see how they hold up in the long run. I don't mean to be negative, but I think we need to look at the entire picture. Okay, I'm going to move on to my next one, if you don't mind, since I have the floor. Did we ever go any further with the idea of these Airbnbs? I keep bringing it up and it just goes dud to the floor.
We have not as of yet.
We need to. We're sitting here and we're talking about hiring somebody to do speed light, speed control in town. We're talking about all other things we'd like to do in town. And here's an opportunity to garner some income. And I understand there's more coming Airbnbs. I have no problem with people fixing their properties up and doing that. It certainly improves the look of properties, but we, the town, are missing the boat. It's a business.
The county, we haven't heard anything additional with the county aspect.
Where we've left it is we just need to get together a list of Airbnbs in Charleston, give that list to the county. They already collect a hotel tax countywide.
Yeah, they collect.
And they will attempt to collect the hotel tax for Charlestown for the Airbnbs we give them. But there's questions about, because the county hasn't done that yet. They've not taxed any Airbnb in Cecil County.
I was told there was a 7% tax. There is no tax so far?
They're not collecting
it. They're not enforced.
We give them a list.
Do we have to technically depend on the county? Or can we not do it on our own?
I'd rather do it in-house.
Yes, I would too. Excuse me?
Technically, we do not have to partner with the county.
Well, why do we? Why are we worried about that?
They incur the administrative fees.
and we get the benefit of the tax. So our administrative fees would go up if we do it ourselves, but that could be something to talk about.
Wait, that's a trouble. We're doing a lot of talking. We're not doing it. How will you determine how often people use these Airbnbs? They have to be registered. As a rental, that's what they
are. There's always
And that goes along with anybody that's renting a property. Perryville had a rental tax, and they charged a rental tax. And I have no problem with that. They got to meet the guidelines. Think about it. Think about smoke detectors, the whole nine yards to go with it. It's important. Egress, ingress.
We are a very small town,
right, but things are changing.
Because
we are small.
And that's a whole nother division. It's just a whole nother job. It's another big job. I don't know. I mean, let's take one step at a time.
All right, let's deal with lodging tax for the Airbnb.
We have, there's the campground tax, which has been kicked around for a bit, that needs to happen. as well as the Airbnb tax or the temporary lodging tax.
Just we're missing the boat, and I'm not out to get in people's pocketbooks, but it's just common sense.
It's fair.
I don't think it's unfair. I don't think we're.
And like I said, it's taxing the property owners are going to pass it on to the people who are staying. So it doesn't necessarily affect their
$400 a night. Yeah. $75.
So anyway, what else you got there?
I kind of got sidetracked. I'm trying to think. Maybe it'll come to me. Go ahead. Move on.
You sure?
Yes.
Okay. It's your time to shine.
Can't think of anything.
All right.
Else.
Well, you will come back. You'll think of it.
I'm sure.
Good. Prosper, you have anything?
Yeah, I'm interested in having the monthly expenses for the town published where the town folks can see what's being spent. We need to run things like a business, and when you kick around, you can't come up with a decision of $50 for a boat flavor. That's a no-brainer. Things are moving on, and I bet you every boat slip in this county is probably double what ours is. So we're giving it away.
There we go. Yeah, we're not in the marina business.
I got one other thing, and this is an idea. During the Wreaths Over America, I got to walk around the cemetery and look at headstones and grave markers. And many of those are settling down below the surface. And this, to me, is a project for a Boy Scout to get a Eagle Merit badge where he would spend time with maybe another scout, and they would raise up some of those stones and grave markers, bring them up to level. This idea isn't mine. It came about by me walking around and talking to a gentleman who evidently is a scout leader, and we got talking about it. So it's an idea I throw out there. Maybe Brian can talk to a scout leader and pass the idea forward and see if it'll get a bite where some Boy Scout will earn some merit badge and help the community. That's it.
Good one. Okay.
Okay. You good, Prosper?
Do you know the scout leader of which he speaks? What's the scout leader's name?
I didn't get his scout leader. Sure, he talked, and then he went off, and I was still looking at grave markers and
Rob DeSoto.
Ron DeSoto.
Rob. I know DeSoto. Rob.
DeSoto, scout leader.
Okay.
Good, Prosper. Thank you, Prosper.
You're welcome. All right, next is CJ.
Oh, here we go. All right. What's the rough population of Charleston?
1,500.
Good. 1,500. And for that walkability thing, you had how many?
14,
right. So that would tell me that the town's ability to notify its residents is horrific. If that was in October, I'm just now hearing about it. I've been coming to meetings since November, I think. I read every single email that Mary sends. Good job. Unfortunately, they're mostly headlines. There's nothing there. I've received more mail from the Charlestown Fire Company asking for money than I have from the own town that I live in. So there probably needs to be some changes there. For the speed cameras, I'm with Dan 100%. And whenever you have a business that is going to charge you money based on really nothing that you're doing, so they're going to just charge you, bang it for $12 for looking up a tag. You can't verify if that car was actually speeding. You can't. There's a whole lot of questions on that. So I would urge the commissioners to investigate a flat rate, which he did mention, but it sounded like he really didn't like that, probably because they don't make any money when they do it that way. But they make a boatload when they charge you $12 a pop. And then on the voting resident, define what a resident is. Because I know that there's some people that have either moved in or are building or have bought property, have houses, probably have utility bills or getting mail. Does that mean that they're a resident, or do they have to actually be living in the house? Because if this, you know, people have been building a house, it takes them a year and a half to build a house. They've been paying their taxes, paying their water bill, getting mail at their residence, but it's not done. Does that qualify as a resident, or does it not? Just a question. And then, I need glasses.
You're not 42 yet.
No, I'm 47.
There's the Ross.
Yeah. Oh, and this I've been bringing up since, you know, I started coming to meetings about a year ago. Very consistently, but storm drains. I will beat this drum until you actually do something. I brought it up, I think it was over a year ago, and I asked if you could just have them jetted, have them cleaned, do something to get them to flow better than what they are. Nothing's been done at all. And I still get flooding at my house nearly every time it rains. So, you know, bump up the pier $50 and then come clean out my storm drain with that $50 you get from everybody. That's it.
Thanks, CJ. Who's next?
Richard.
Good evening, Richard.
Yes. What's going on with the post office? I hear around town that the post office is leaving. And is the town happy about it? Is the town doing anything about it?
We've sent correspondence to the U.S. Post Office,
right,
to find out what exactly, because from my understanding, it is just a rumor at this point in time. Right. We've had no formal communication from the post office saying they're closing or anything like that. Right. Now, we have a year-to-year lease with them, which has not been canceled.
Right.
So. But we did send them a letter saying, hey, what are your intentions at this point in time? Particularly what spurred it, of course, is the fact that we're building or designing a new town hall. We need to know if we're making accommodations for the post office or not. So that letter went out last in December. So we haven't heard back, but I'm glad you bring it up because
sent it certified mail.
We need to follow up with them and find out. Did they receive it?
Yes.
Wonderful.
Received it. It landed back.
Letter just to themselves, right?
One of the things, because the rumor has been going around, so I started looking into it a bit. And there is a program sponsored by the United States Postal Service called the Village Post Office Program. And you can have a building and a merchant can have a post office within their confines. We already have that sort of here. The town is a business, is an ongoing business.
So if the government were to say that they're leaving town, we could theoretically become a village post office operation, and the town would then have to hire someone, but that would also coincide and tie into building new town hall, because the part of the rumors that I heard was that if there were no town, or if there were no post office, there'd be outdoor kiosks with post office boxes. But then you have to ask yourself, somebody still has to fill those boxes. Yeah. So who is that, and why couldn't that person be dedicated to Charlestown as a post office employee?
I mean, I'd hate to see us lose our post office, to be honest with you. I love the post office. And but that's why I'm eager. I was happy we sent this letter out, and we'll get some feedback from them. And then if they're looking at closing it down, I think we should tell them how important it is to the vitality of the community.
Yes, I completely agree. But I also think that somebody from the town commission should be talking to Andy Harris to see what he could do. I mean, I always am told, oh, well, we've got the MML, but I don't really have a lot of respect for
MML is useful for what it's useful for.
Yeah, but this is an individual thing. This is a congressional thing. It's a federal government issue. Let's talk to our congressman.
Agree with you.
Let's get some money from the congressman.
Okay.
So that's that topic. Shoreline. I agree that the sewer outlets or whatever those are, the sewer caps need to be taken care of, but I'm not thrilled with the idea of big logs. I just got a permit to clean up my beach, to restore the beach, get rid of the debris on my beach, and now tonight I'm being told, hey, we're going to bring some debris in, and we're going to put some
But I'm glad you were here, because this is like I said, we just got this drawing today or yesterday. And so we all I think most of us knew there were going to be, you know, people saying, oh, even myself, when I looked at it, I was like, well, this isn't going to work. But
and it would have said wide sand beach.
All the residents are going to have input on this, and nothing's happening on this for a while. But we all agree that those sewer lines need some protection.
Also, the little crab claws. I bought a view. I bought water. I don't. No crab claws. No crab growing in my foreground.
So I trust you would like to participate in the visit of the gentleman when he comes down. Okay, great. We'll put him on the list, okay?
We'll add him to the list.
And I have one other topic, but I can't think of what it is. So
we'll come back to you, like Miss Boudard, if you think of it.
Probably the same thing I'm thinking of.
Yes. Oh, I do know what it was.
See?
No, I have a boat. My slip is $1,650 a year. It's gone up every year, every season. That's at the Northeast Marina. It's $1,600. And I'm in the crappy part of the marina. Mm-hmm. They put in new floating docks, but I'm still in the old section, and I get an increase every year. So a $50 increase is just good business. It's just, and also I would remind you that the word boat is an acronym for break out another thousand. So if you have a boat, you can afford the $50 increase because it's a luxury.
Well, it used to be that down pier was just for Charlestown residents.
Yeah.
But that's not the game anymore, and anybody can get it. So, you know, what's the point of keeping the prices down? Somebody from Pennsylvania is utilizing that pier just as much as somebody right down the street.
It's inappropriate not to raise cost of living. I mean, in my apartment building, all my operating costs have gone up. Everything's gone up, so I have to raise rents. Same thing with, you don't just operate a marina at a deficit.
Anything else?
Nope.
Yeah. Dennis.
I guess just adding me to the list also when they come out. I'll probably have more to say in the future.
We'll do. Think about think about it, you know, think about what you would find agreeable, right? And protect that. I mean, that's.
May I ask a question? Is this group that is doing projecting this job is different from the one that just did the work in front of the football?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. The engineer, yes. Yeah. It's a different company.
So, and where's the project in Hobbity Grace?
It's right down. Well, if you know where Old Price's Crab House used to be, it's now called Water Street Cafe, I think. If you go into town and you get to the railroad bridge before you kind of veers right, go left.
Okay.
And it's quite an extensive project. But what that project does is not only just the shoreline, but it collects all their stormwater and filters the stormwater. So it's collecting a lot of stormwater for the town, which is neat. Who else? Who's next?
That's it.
How about online?
Oh.
Yeah.
Who we got up there, Mary?
Oh, I'm sorry. I've just had my back turned. Hi, Thelma.
Good evening, you guys. Thanks for having me. I have some thoughts about the Charlestown Pier. Carl, you made the remark, it used to be for residents only, and that's how I remember it. And I see us gone through hoops all of a sudden to make it not so expensive, blah, 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 blah. And it's for maybe people that have Airbnbs that aren't giving to the town, where you've got somebody that's been a town resident for 15 years, maybe on the list for 15 years to get a boat slip. So I guess I would like that to be in your considerations. You know what I mean? Like with the town pier deal. Like I agree with like bringing up the prices and stuff like that, but like who are we taking care of right now? The residents that's been here forever, or new people that just have Airbnbs? They could care less about the town. They're just making money off of us. So I would just like you to keep that into consideration. Also, there's been so many good things brought up tonight. It was an excellent meeting. And with, I forget the guy's name, about the transportation and stuff like that. But and the trails along Footlog, excellent, because I live here. So people know the difference between private and town property, but I don't know who is going to maintain that. Is it the Department of Transportation? Is it the county? Do we have to maintain that? Do we have the resources to maintain that? That was my other question. And the roundabouts in town, I think, are excellent. Like the intersections are confusing, but also I would ask consideration for water runoff to other properties, not just, okay, we can throw in new pavement on Baltimore Street and you just do it, but there's no afterthought. So the roundabouts, that there's afterthought about stormwater runoff. I think there were other things, but I wrote so much down. I think tonight was an excellent meeting, you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it. Thanks.
Thank you. Have a good night. Thank you. Anybody else? Where's Ms. Rowe? Ms. Rowe up there?
You also have Robin.
I was going to say she's.
I'm here.
There she is. Good evening.
Hi. I don't have any questions at this time or comments, but thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Robin. How could you have missed Ms. Audrey?
Clean all the debris on the shoreline on Bladen Street, and that goes all the way down almost to Tasker, but not that far down.
You're saying the shoreline?
Lane Street.
You're talking Footlog Park?
Footlog Park down to Tasker. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
But that was the, it's still Lane Street. That was the stop extended. Where the rails
gotcha.
Are.
Gotcha.
And I call that Lane Street. So that was the original thing. And the gray is 5-6 feet wide.
Sure.
Fours and junk. Okay.
We got the man right here.
Yeah. You tell me where you're.
She's talking about Footlog. Footlog.
Between Footlog and Tasker.
Stops at Baltimore Street because everybody got a quick claim deed to the They got a quick claim deed, so it belongs to the people who have their houses.
How do I get a truck there now? I can't get a big
That's because of the erosion. The land washed.
How am I supposed to get a truck down in there to get it?
Just ask it. Did we ever determine whether there was access
to the land? I'll do it.
Is that private? That road going down? Crutchley owns that?
Get a barge.
The town doesn't know if Crutchley owns it or it's the town's. It has to be decided.
To the football. The rest of it is private property.
We will see about getting that cleaned up. Anything else for public comment? Okay.
Thank you.
The national president of the DAR, who goes to every state, and she had just been to Rogers Tavern, and she wanted to put a small historical marker in Charlestown because it's the old post road from Philadelphia to Baltimore. Yeah. And I had went to the planning committee, and we talked about getting this done, and I filed a file, and now she has emailed me that our time is running out if we don't get an approval.
What do we need to do?
Be canceled.
What's the deadline?
She changes it all the time.
She just emailed me today.
I had the whole folder.
Okay.
She just emailed me something today. I didn't open it up yet.
Put it on the agenda next meeting.
Oh, you need it before the next meeting.
Yeah. If we don't get it.
But what is it? This is for to have a historical marker designating the old post road.
It's nothing big.
Do we know where
these taverns, the Red Lion and the Indian Queen,
okay,
were prominent stopovers between Baltimore and some.
So it would be in. Right. It would be in front of the Red Lion and the Indian Queen. Yes,
very small, between the tree properties.
Curtis, are you still here? Curtis.
Probably not. Some here. Hey. I couldn't. The thing wouldn't unmute.
Okay. Well, you want a resolution or whatever or a vote from the town commissioners.
It needs a permit.
But. But you want
district commission,
yes, right? So
accepted with a picture.
Now the permit hasn't been reviewed yet because it wasn't complete, right?
We didn't have any of the information.
But the historic district commission and the planning and zoning commission, depending on what the timeline is, the deadline, we could call a special meeting for those boards to hear it.
Yes.
Well, I was going to say
the next meeting is February 5th and February 7th.
We could vote that we. Consent to it conditioned upon approval of the historic commission, and if that's what they need, is that what they need? Do you want to make a motion?
I'll make a motion. Yeah. What do you want me to say?
Make a motion that the town commissioners consent to the placement of a historical marker designating the old post road, provided that it passes the historic commission as well as the planning and zoning commission.
That's what I propose right there.
I'll second it.
Second, all in favor, say aye.
Aye. So you need to the talk. Repeat it.
All right. That's what I heard it now.
the town commissioner's consent to the placement of a historical marker.
They have
identifying
they have
the old post road. The old post road. Provided
this woman just hold on to the, I don't know.
Planning and zoning and the historic.
She needs to talk to Brian.
Yeah.
Bring something forth. She needs to bring some paperwork in or have it transferred.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
So and Pamela Johnson is something with the DAR.
Miss Alder.
DAR.
Miss. Miss Audrey, anything else? Anything else, Miss Audrey? Okay.
Thank you.
I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
I will make a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Yes, sir. Do we have a second?
Yep, sir. I'll second it.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Have a good one.